is Art Town, and I'm your host, Justin Baker. Well, friends of Art Town, I could say buddies of Art Town, thank you for tuning in. It's spring. It's getting a little nice out. And what are you doing? You working in the yard? Maybe? Cleaning up? Maybe? I don't know. You might be. And, well, good luck with all that. I think this year, we're talking about maybe a pool. Like, not a expensive one, but, you know, a less expensive one. So, that's coming. Yeah. So, well, anyway. Today, a trip to see Mom. That was on the calendar. And it was more of a tech support trip. I don't know I don't know about our visits. I don't know. It's a lot of time of her on her phone. So that's always kind of depressing. But yeah, she shows me the things she sees on Facebook, and that's pretty exciting for her. So, I mean, I guess at least it's exciting. I guess that's the thing. She's excited about that. So that's a good thing. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I try to make it brief. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, how much can you do? So I tried to get the printer fixed. So the printer was a big issue. Because, you know, you got to print things out all the time. And, So I was not successful in getting the printer fixed. And that was kind of shitty. I felt bad about that. But the real question is how much printing do you need to do? That's part of it, right? So Mom likes to print everything out, apparently. I think in our house, we probably use our printer maybe once a month. I don't know. I don't know how much we do. Maybe twice? You know, even the kid with the homework, not too much. But she might use it the most. So, it's kind of puzzling why this printer has, turned into, such a big deal. A lot of texts about it, some phone calls, and, I made my voyage today and I was unsuccessful. I even got a part. Tried to fix the printer, and I could not. So, that was my day. But, what's in store for you is Rob O'Neill. That's our guest this month. Or, as some people say, Robert O'Neill. Take your pick on that. I think on the website, though, it goes for the Rob. So, however you want to address him, that's, maybe between you and Rob. So, Rob is, I would say, a good friend and certainly a wealth of knowledge about art, the history of art, and any art-related photography. And this was fun. I the thing about Rob is he probably has forgotten more about photography than I know. But he's very kind in that he doesn't hold that against me. So, which he could, maybe, I don't know. He's a sweetheart. So I don't think he would, but you know, as we're talking, he's like, yeah, you know what I'm talking. And I mostly do, but I don't think in the depth that he does. So, kudos to him. Because we kind of cross, you know, he's a little bit older than me. And, I think his, tutelage, you know, his instruction, in academia was maybe more rigorous than mine. I think most of my professors were, you know, kind of like a little freer, like, just see what happens, you know, kind of that kind of thing. So I think my, I was just different, but, you know, most of the things I know, I probably, you know, have taught myself. So you can see where that's lacking. Anyway, what am I trying to say? He's an amazing artist. That I guess that's first and foremost, which, you know, I always feel like everyone I talk to is. And here it is, though. The thing that gets me, and it's like probably the most throwaway project he has, the thing that gets me excited about Rob is his Christmas tree photographs. And I like everything he does. I tell him in the interview, which you'll hear, that like, you know, I wait for that, you know, every year, you know, once it gets like Christmas break, you know, home, you know, after Christmas, it's like, let's go. I look forward to it. Maybe, and it's not really, I don't know what it's maybe not the images, but the ideas. And that's the cool thing about Rob, is that there's like multiple ways in, and all of his work, not just the Christmas tree thing. And, anyways, well, you'll hear it. I will note Rob comes in, he comes in a little hot, which I like. So the interview is going to start and it's going to be like, pow. If I'm remembering this right, I think I am. But I say, I think like 5 minutes in, okay, let's start. Anyway, he was ready, which makes sense. That guy prepares. I know he does. So he's no slouch. He's a great artist, a great photographer, and a great talker. So here you go. Friends of our town. Buddies of our town. Rob O'Neill.
It's always fun to hear.
Okay.
I didn't know you studied civil engineering.
I failed miserably at it, but it did inform a lot of my interests, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the things that I'm interested in and have pursued with my photos.
So yeah.
That's why it's on the resume.
And I could see it. I was like, oh, this kind of makes sense.
Structures, systems, mm-hmm. Infrastructure. It's interesting now because Sean, who's a year older than Lola, is studying civil engineering.
Oh, really?
And he's really interested in like water systems. So he's like, you know, he knew I was a photographer and all that stuff, but it's interesting to watch him like show him some of the water books that I have or some of my mm-hmm. work. And he's like, wow, you walk through that. Oh, you know, I'm doing this. It's pretty cool, actually.
That is neat.
I felt like, wow. And I never felt connected to you before, but now I do. No, it's not true. Cut that out.
And then, let's see. Yeah, just like a little bit about getting into photography. And then we can like talk about like some of your current projects.
Sure. I mean, really, I have to say that my brother, one of my brothers, I'm the youngest of seven. So I have four brothers. The next youngest had a dark room in our house when growing up. And it was, I sort of was like, it was weird. It was, it smelled funny. And, I sort of watched what he was doing, but it was just kind of there. And he didn't do it for very long. It was probably, I don't even know if he was in high school at that point in time, but it sort of stuck with me. And then when I was in high school, I was on yearbook.
Mm.
Funny story. Now I'm the yearbook moderator at the academies. It's weird. Comes around, I guess.
Yeah.
And so we had a dark room. And it was a simple dark room, but, we shot film and developed film, and that was cool. And then I just kind of kept doing it. And I remember when I was at the University of Cincinnati for civil engineering, I was in a dorm, big, tall dorm. And I remember bringing my little larger and trays and with some couple buddies, I don't know if it was a bathroom or it was a janitor's closet or something. We shot some film, developed it, made some prints right there. So, and it wasn't, mostly it was just the act of it, right? It was this, mm-hmm. You do a lot of analog film. It's magic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It is. I mean, and I think everybody that's ever done it has been like, wow.
It works.
Really cool. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. So, and then civil engineering didn't really pan out for me. It was not all the math plus just my commitment wasn't there. I was not interested in doing that for a whole host of reasons. But so I took a semester off and then went to the University of Akron, which is where I was from, and started taking classes. And I'm like, I like photo. I'll take this photo class. And it was a photo one class in an art, in an art department. Yeah. Like what we've both taught. And I was like, wow. And we did pinhole cameras and we played with 4x5, and this was in a photo one class. I'm like, this is amazing. This is great. And so I just, I figured out that I could, in fact, get a degree. Who knew you could get a BFA in photography? I come from a family of engineers and lawyers, so it was
nice. Were you like the black sheep?
Not really, no.
No.
No, I have another brother who was definitely the black sheep. I was the add-on.
Wait, how many brothers?
I am the youngest of seven.
Uh-huh.
My mother had six kids in 8 years, and then me 7 years after all that. So there's a 15, 16 year span between my oldest sister and me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, but I mean, it's like my brother Tom was 7 or 8 when I was born. So,
wow.
He's eight.
So, okay.
It's a big chunk of. So, I was kind of like this only child.
Six kids in 8 years. That doesn't sound Catholic.
And they didn't start till they were 30.
Wow.
Like, mom was 46 when I was born.
Yeah.
Huh. Which is. That's pushing it.
Yeah,
that's getting up there. So then I just love photography. So I got my BFA in photography.
Hmm.
And I mean, I was very interested. I was very influenced by one particular professor who it was and still is a landscape photographer, essentially, in the kind of new topographics tradition. Do I need to get closer? And it fit. With my mindset, fit that idea of structure and grids and systems, and I could make photographs about these things that was what interested me in civil engineering, except that I didn't have to do calculus. And just the rigor of it, I was one of the few people at the time in my undergrad who just like went exclusively to 4x5. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is still shooting 35 and, because I just loved it. And then I'm like, oh, well, what do we do with that? What do you do with a BFA in photography? The question we've all as a teacher, people, what do I do with my BFA?
Mm-hmm. When you were moving through is it University of Akron?
Yes. University of Akron. Yeah.
So you move into, I want to back up a second.
Back up.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Of course. Of course.
Now we're starting.
Well, yes.
So
let's restart.
You go in to study civil engineering.
Yeah.
Do you take a year off after that?
I was at the University of Cincinnati for a year. And they kind of asked me to leave. They said, you have two choices. You can leave or you can take a year off and try to come back. And I'm like, okay, well, that's lots of, my father died my junior year in college. That was impacting. So I was in a place where I wasn't mature enough to be in a, especially in a heavy science, math curriculum. Yeah. And so I did, I took a semester off. I worked at a United Colors of Benetton.
No kidding.
It was great. And at the mall, and then started taking classes at the University of Akron because it was there. And then just, yeah, then it evolved. Then I kind of found a passion and, but I was pretty rudderless there for a little bit.
Yeah. Because what you said, junior year of college, do you mean junior year of high school? Or when
my father died? Junior year of high school. High school. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty
heavy. I was like 17. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. And he was young too. He was only 65 when he died. So.
Wow.
64 actually. But,
was it heart attack?
He died of cirrhosis of the liver, essentially. It was heart failure, but, the casualty of being, from an Irish Catholic family.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And an attorney who had three martini lunches.
Got you. So. Wow. So he was an attorney. Mm-hmm. You said like, most of it was like attorneys or engineering.
So I have a sister and a brother who are both attorneys. Mm-hmm. I have two brothers that are engineers. I have, I'm losing track here. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then I have a sister who was a theater education major in college, and she did a lot of theater. She also worked. She was an educator. She taught eighth grade language arts in New Jersey. Was teacher of the year for a bit there. Wow. And then I have another brother who college wasn't for him, so he made his way doing his own sort of maintenance business and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So.
Huh. Wow. It's like pretty intense family, it seems like.
I mean, it's just...
Was it? Or
it was, but I was so removed, right?
Because I was the youngest?
Yeah. So I was 8 years younger when, they all were... I mean, by the time I became... like cognizant, my sister Patience was almost out to college.
Right. Yeah.
And she was itching to get out anyway. Mm-hmm. My sister Kathy, who I'm really close to, I was really close because she was, she was like 12, 13 when I was born. So I was like, and my parents were sort of like, we had all of you to take care of him.
Yeah, right.
Like you do when you have that many kids. Yeah, yeah. And so they rose to that challenge. She was like, hey, this is great. So,
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was that. And and the boys are the boys. Boys are in high school, boys are different than girls. Boys are kind of like focused on their thing.
Or just ramming around.
Yeah. And they did. They ran around. There were some. Yeah. I still don't understand that because, I have two older boys that are 3 years apart, and they didn't fight. They bickered a little bit, but like my brothers would like get into fist fights.
Yeah,
like knock down, drag them out stuff.
Yeah,
and I was like, wow,
a lot of testosterone.
I guess something around. Like that.
Yeah,
but yeah, so that's
So big family. You kind of I get that. I mean, I was the youngest too, so it was like
you got three. On top of you?
Yeah. And then my father had a family before.
Got it. Okay. So there's an extended.
Yeah. And they were much older. Like my oldest sibling, of the crew was in Vietnam.
So, right. Yeah. So good 20 years.
Yeah. Easily. Yeah. So, I mean, it was, I have one sister I've probably met three times.
Right. So right. It's just like, so it's very abstract in terms of,
Of what the family is.
And mine was mine wasn't quite that abstract because we were all under one roof, but it was definitely, in fact, it's been odd since COVID. During COVID, we did like weekly Zooms, which, if any of my relatives are going to listen to this, but that was a lot.
Yeah.
But like we were talking more than I had talked to any of them in 20 years.
That's interesting.
And yeah. So now we talk every, you know, we try to do every other week, but usually mm-hmm. it's like every 3 weeks. So it's interesting to be back in where they are. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm still like, I'm, you know, just because I'm 8 years younger, I'm still, or 7 years younger, I'm still in the, like, I'm, you know, I'm going through stuff they went through 7 years ago.
Right. Right.
So it's interesting because they're all, you know, they're getting up there.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, many of them are retired. And so,
yeah. And then you probably have the youngest kid out of
most indubitably. Yeah, yes. No, I, yeah. And yeah. So my parents' grandkids, my mother and father's grandkids. So they had, you know, they had kids late, like I said. Mm-hmm. And they run, I mean, my Lord, my old nephew is probably 40.
Mm.
And Riley's 9.
Wow.
So it's a big spread.
Yeah, yeah. Right? That's a big spread.
Growing
up out in, what was it, Akron?
Ohio, yeah. Akron, yeah. Ohio.
You, like, were you exposed to art? Like, were you, like, cognizant of?
Not so much growing up.
Like,
no,
did your parents take you to anything?
Yeah, I mean, there was the Akron Art Museum, which was a much smaller thing when I was growing up. It's a wonderful museum now. But, and we would go, but not, it wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until college. And I guess I took an art history class in high school. There was an art history class that was kind of fascinating, but mm-hmm. it was a canonical kind of thing. When I got to college, I'm like, oh, okay. And you know, you take the survey courses. And then I actually got an art history minor just because it was fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
So, especially when you start, because again, it's that structure kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because history imposes this structure over chaos, kind of,
mm-hmm.
because our lives are, you know, it's a distilling down so that we can understand it, because humans tend to want to make things not simplistic, but organized in a function,
right.
So we can, you know, and that's, you know, that's what I loved about photography, right? So,
yeah.
Cause it distills down and it makes this, you know, nice little package. Not that history is a nice little package, but art history, to see the kind of connections and see how photography changed visual culture, the plastic arts, to see that, you know, so I would argue that photography freed painting such that Jackson Pollock could exist.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not my original idea. Andre Bazin right. wrote a really wonderful article about it, but that notion that photography, because, you know, because up until that point, Western art was really all about the drive to the real,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially when linear perspective came in, when mm-hmm. people were like, we want this to be so realistic, like hyper realistic. And then photography came along and everybody was like, well, I guess that does it really well.
Yeah.
So let's go do other things. Let's paint water lilies and stuff. So
when you first pick up the camera
yep.
and you're kind of moving around with it
uh-huh.
and you have this professor who's kind of pointing you in a way towards landscape, mm-hmm. it sounds like to me.
It does.
What got you engaged in that? Like what, like as a lands, like what were you looking for? What, like in the beginning?
So I remember actually my first advanced photo class, and it's a traditional like photo one, photo two,
mm-hmm.
maybe special in there, and then and then advanced, where you'd follow a theme. And I remember I was photographing new construction, so frame building, and I was just, you know, shooting a 35mm, and it was very traditional where, you know, okay, you got to shoot two rolls of film a week, which,
right, yeah.
you know, you know, quantity.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll get to quality. And I remember just, you know, like loved wandering around these spaces. It was a little, you know, because you weren't supposed to be there. There was a little mm-hmm. bit of that.
Yeah.
We're walking around new construction where it was snowing. And so it started to develop in my mind this idea of, just how we change the landscape. And, you know, it, clearly there's a Robert Frank, or not Robert Frank, Robert Adams influence there, right? So Adams wrote a lot about, and this particular professor, Andrew Borowick, would you know, we read a lot of the Adams' articles, which were influential. Like, you know, you're looking at the world, right? Can you make a photograph in a really banal, boring place? So that was a lot of the challenge. Like, who wants to photograph new construction besides some real estate speculator?
Right.
Yeah. So those kind of things were interesting to me.
Okay. And did you like, cause I'm like, it's funny cause I like for the first time in, I don't know, a long time, I'm not taking pictures in my basement.
You're not?
I'm coming out and
really?
Like, finding things and I'm looking and
that's interesting.
And I'm like, and I'm remembering back to like, oh, this is so fun,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like to be engaged and like zoned out and
right.
not caring what's around me and like the whole process of like setting up the 4x5 and, you know, like there's like a ritual to it.
Right. So I always thought of it. I always liked it. And I kind of live in both of these camps. Not that it's a, it is a dichotomy, but I think of it as hunting and fling. And right. again, it's not my metaphor. Somebody thought it up. Windows and Mirrors works as well. But, but this idea that there's photographs of, in a hunting vein, you know, you're out there and then you think about cameras, you shoot yeah. things, you capture images, you point this thing, this, you know, and so that kind of like, I'm hunting, I'm searching, I'm trying to make patterns. I'm trying to right. organize this visual thing in front of you. Whereas there's other photographs that I've made that I'm very much interested in, like what you said in your basement, where it's really about farming. It's like, you know, you prepare the land, you plant the seed, you tend to them, it grows out of nothing, much the way painting does, right? Like
right,
traditional yeah. painting
studio.
Comes out yeah. of, you know, this relationship. And I can't make peace with either of them, right? And it didn't start till grad school, where I was really like, wow, that's a whole thing, where I started making the images that are similar to the projection images or the the uncoupling series stuff.
That's what I was curious about next, really, because like so you go to Southern Illinois University.
At Carbondale, yeah. So it's a whole big thing.
Yeah.
It's Carbondale. Actually, funny story about Carbondale. Carbondale was the one place in the United States where both solar eclipses, the one from 2017 and the one that was just last week, crossed.
Uh-huh.
It like crossed right there.
Wow.
Anyway,
that's in the middle. Yeah, kind of like dead. And yeah. Now, that's funny. Also, like I'm curious about your – because – like my father was from Indiana, so he was a Midwestern, and that part of Illinois is pretty south.
It's very
really.
South. It went south where we were, went south with the Civil War.
Yeah, like I was looking at a map last night. Like you're below
St. Louis, Dixon. No, it's down there. It's hilly, actually. You think of Illinois and Illinois, Indiana is these kind of flat.
Yeah,
it's actually quite hilly down there.
What I'm just curious because, you know, it's like what? So you get your undergrad.
Yep.
And I feel like you probably took a year.
I took 3 years off.
Three years off.
Yeah.
What was going on then?
I sold wood carvings that were made in the Philippines around the United States.
Oh my God. Really?
Really. So a family friend and his partner. Late 60s, they were in the Peace Corps together in the Philippines, and they met a bunch of people and they, you know, sort of turn around into the late 80s and early 90s, and they wanted to give back. They both wanted to retire from a business and from a family business, and they went back to the Philippines and found a couple of carvers, and they made it wasn't traditional carvings. They were interested in American folk art. So they made these sort of pseudo folk art kind of things. And He imported them, and the goal was never make money. They never made any money. But the goal was to help the farmers and the carvers that they right. met in the Philippines. It was really all about giving back to the Philippines. So it was very altruistic, and they were great. They were amazing people.
So you're cruising around with these things?
So we would, yeah. So we'd fill up box trucks with wood carvings. We did some like real kind of legit thing, like gift shows, like the New York right. gift show, like yeah. the San Francisco gift show. Wow. And we sold to a lot of sort of higher end boutique stores, but we also did flea markets. So, you know, you're sleeping under the truck in Kutztown, Pennsylvania, or Brimfield, Massachusetts. And so, but it was great because I was just driving, you know,
I
was
that's what I'm thinking.
Driving. Yeah. And so, you know, you think about the later work that I've made about rest stops. I'm like, that was a foster for that.
Yeah. Are you taking pictures this whole time?
I was, but not really. Yeah. I mean, I sort of was taking pictures, but not.
Not like in a Robert Frank way.
Not a maniacal way. I always think that I always kick myself because I think I should be more maniacal with my landscape photographs. Like I should just be, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've stopped the family on road trips a couple times, and I just don't want to do
that. I wonder about that that relationship with some of those rest stop pictures.
Mostly, it's on my own, really, Ani. Because
I figured it had to be.
Or it's like the half hour while people get food, and like walk around in the snow. Yeah. But mostly, it was dedicated trips.
Yeah.
There have been a couple of times, like Elizabeth and Riley and I went, when was it? That was, must have been 2021. We went to, we visited some friends in Palm Desert, which is near Palm Springs, California, but we flew into Vegas and drove down through Joshua Tree. It was lovely, beautiful. But I did like stop and took pictures and I have done a couple of those in places, but mostly it's been like, I take a big loop. I'll like go, I'll drive across New York State, I'll stop in Ohio. So it limits me, right? Like that series could never be complete, right? I can never exhaust the amount of work. I'm getting real tired of the series at this point in time. Because I'm like, I think I've taken enough pictures that every picture that I make is interesting in some way, but also kind of like, well, I have other pictures that say that as well. So, you know, that's one of those, when you're doing a pic like that, it's like, when do you just put it to bed?
So the rest stop series is like a catalog of highway rest stops that like examine it in a way of like, I think akin to like a new topographics way.
A little bit
because you do this thing of like movement. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you're not afraid to like let that other like little thing happen. I think that's like the one thing that's like very different about your work is like it's not like this straight thing. There is this like little weird thing that happens.
So going back on that, when I was in grad school, so my graduate thesis, which I don't know how deep you went into my website, but
I looked around for a while.
I mean, it's kind of sprawling at this point in time. But the extraordinary commonplace work, which is, it was a small town in Illinois, just about 8 miles north of Carbondale, distinct for nothing really, other than in like 1924, a tornado came through and ripped the city up. But a town, really, it's not even a city. It's about 2,000 people, maybe less at this point in time. It's a little feeder community. Most people either, you know, work a trade or it feeds the.
Do you say a theater community?
No, feeder. Sorry, community. I apologize. Okay. Feeder. Yeah, no, it's okay. It feeds diversity or gotcha. That. But and so I started making pictures, and I met really like 3 or 4 families. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't. I've never really been interested in the sort of Alex Soth, Walker Evans portraits of people and then landscape. Portraits are always weird to me because I always think that the reason we like portraits is that it's impolite to stare at people in real life. But a photograph lets us just stare with impunity. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
Like, it gets weird if I'm staring at you and looking at your pores.
Right.
But if I take a picture of you and put it on the wall and make it big, like Thomas Struth big.
Right.
I mean, that's what I'm looking at. So that's just me. I mean, I love portraits, and I love people that can make wonderful portraits, but I'm not, I can't imagine. So the work, basically, there's lots of people in my photographs, but they're all moving.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just make sure that, you know, I was at a quarter of a second, or I was at an eighth, or, you know, half a second. So, and that idea of light, the like sort of beautiful afternoon light and smoke and stuff like that was always interesting. So I'm trying to bring those kind of things into the rest area. Mm-hmm. Right. So that, and it's, you know, it's one of those photographic things, right? So still photography is that only thing that is the only thing that can capture that amount of time in one picture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's big thing, right? So it can, and we all know it because we've kind of, our visual culture has acclimatized ourselves to it such that we, you know, we see things that blur, but we really don't. Right. Mm-hmm. And that notion of those things is really beautiful. That like instantaneous, that moment where things move, mm-hmm. and gives us, you know, so my photographs are still very direct. This is what I hope my photographs are. They're very direct. They're very informational.
Yeah.
But they also have this little hiccup, this little bit of beauty or mystery.
Right, right.
I always like that. I don't know how.
It's like a little aberration of.
I guess.
Like,
I mean, I always, you know, because I'm self-deprecating, I'm always like, oh, I'm just doing this thing, and you know, it's just, everybody's done it. But I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I think it is those things. It's because I feel like that's like just the little thing that like separates them from not being the. A kind of a known style or, you know, there's like this thing you're doing that's like interesting. One in particular that like really just was so great was this one, I forget what series you had it in, but of it's like under a bridge and there's a pipe just gushing water. And I'm like, how perfect is that?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, cause it kind of introduces this in some way, like,
I know.
It adds this like level of humanity to them or something, where it's like they're not these strict systems. There's like this, there's a thing, there's an occurrence, you know? So in that series, the other thing that I find interesting about the rest area series is that it goes into this like peripheral environment that's like, it like uniquely constructed for this one purpose.
It's kind of this very liminal space, this very, you know, like ancillary kind of annoying. Are you good? Annoying space, but yeah, I mean, like people spend time, and actually, it's not on my statement on my website, but it is in a sort of bigger statement that I have. It was actually mandated. So when the Eisenhower system, what became the Eisenhower system, that started being developed, there was like, well, we need to, there's a little paragraph in the thing, we need to make way stops. We need to make places where people can picnic. We can, you know, they can stop, they can rest. It's funny. It said that people have grills and stuff, but it didn't say that you could have bathrooms. But now, you know, now it's a range, right?
Yeah.
So there's the throughway stops now that they're redoing that are like, you know, like one-stop shopping, right? Like
you can
buy bananas, you can buy Chick-fil-A, you can do all this stuff. And it's self-contained, one, because the throughway is self-contained. But then there's also some ones like in Vermont where there's one up in Vermont that's like the north corner of Vermont where literally there's some grandma in a rocking chair by wood stove with like, a wall of brochures, and she just it may not always be a grandma, yeah, but yeah. It was when I was
right.
It's like just in the middle, like right off the Canadian border.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, Vermont's funny. New Hampshire's real funny too, because a lot of those are really just like calm, like little pull-offs that have a little house and have what's around the neighborhood. And
how many have you photographed?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I don't know. I should have prepared. I should have counted.
It's okay.
I don't think thousands. I think hundreds.
Yeah, yeah.
But probably high hundreds.
Yeah.
Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Vermont, Hampshire. I have never photographed one in Rhode Island.
Interesting.
Because I think there's only two.
Oh, that's what I was going to guess.
Yeah, Delaware. Say. There's one in Delaware. I photographed that one. Yeah. But like Delaware, I mean, like all across the East Coast, Ohio, West Virginia, I haven't gone to Illinois or Indiana mm-hmm. or Kentucky that far down. I've been to North Carolina, Virginia, Florida because we flew there one time. So there's some photographs in Florida, Colorado because I was out there and took some pictures, Nevada, Arizona, California. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of it. I mean, it's, you know, how could you, right? Unless at this point in my life, I don't have that kind of time.
Right.
I don't have the kind of time to dedicate to, I mean, I would be divorced.
Yeah.
If I dedicated that kind of time to,
but in it, it's like one, it's almost like you could do the project in one.
Right. Exactly. Right. And that's the really funny thing, right? You photograph one, I'm going to lose the.
Well, not like only one photograph, but you could like make it all happen,
in one rest stop.
Couple.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, how much can you distill down, and how unique is a rest area in Washington State from, I mean, there's regional differences. Sure. Trees are different. Yeah. The outbuildings are different, but ultimately they kind of serve the same purpose. Yeah. Right. So that's why I'm like, what's the logical end point of it? Mm-hmm. You know, I've got 1,000 pictures that I think are interesting, right?
Yeah.
So my Lightroom catalog is, I've shot a lot more than that, but mm-hmm. I just did the, you know, I just actually just looked at it the other day. I'm like, okay, well, these are all the yellow ones and all the other ones. There's like 1,000 of them. Mm. Wow. That's a lot of photographs. Now, mind you, really it distills down to like maybe 200 that are interesting to me that would not be repetitive, but,
do you shoot it in 4 or 5 or is it all digital?
It's all digital these days. Yeah. The last thing I did film was this work here. See, now I can pull this crap off the wall here that I've got. This work about the DNH
the rail trail. Yeah.
That is now, that's a really lovely trail now. And that was all medium format, 6x7.
This is a beautiful book you made.
Well, that's the thing that I talked to you about. I'm like making books now.
Really?
Yeah. I love books.
Okay. What's the process, or what? This looks like a Japanese binding.
It is. It's a very simple signature bound, it kind of started with this one. So you've brought up the this is where the notion of being on the radio is really going to fail us. But those the Christmas tree photographs.
Yeah.
So I always wondered how to deal with it, right? How do you deal with these? I mean, because I would take them on my phone and I would post them to Instagram, but how do they live? You know, am I going to make 24x24 prints of them and put them on a wall? No. So the book, this little book, was a way to...
It's gorgeous.
Was a way to make it work. Actually, it was not the initial one. The initial one was when I had a show of the rest area work up in... Lake George. I made 30 of these little books. That was just they're pretty simple, but they're just of many of the works that were in the show.
I love this photograph.
Which one?
This
that
is
one?
On my office door.
Yeah, I like that one. That yeah, on thank there. You, thank you. So books are because I seem to have less and less time these days. Mm-hmm. Books are something that I can come down and work on in a little bit. You know, I don't have to be out photographing. I can put these together. Now, what happens with them? I don't know. I ship them off friends and like, mm-hmm. here, look at my book, how it opens. Here you go. Like
gotcha. That. Okay. That is so, now what's your background in this? Cause this is like some pretty complicated stuff. Is this
so
self-taught or?
A little bit of both. So in grad school, the great thing about, Southern Illinois, the program there was that it was a 3-year program. Mm-hmm. And they really encouraged you to take go take classes in the art department. Cause the photo was not in the art department. It was cinema and photography. It was in mass communications. And my thesis advisor, Charles Swedland, he ran a class over the summer called Portfolio and Presentation, or maybe it was Presentation and Portfolio, but it was a bookbinding class. We made boxes, we made books, we did a lot of stuff.
Clamshell box.
And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I actually used it when I, because I had an assistantship when I was in grad school as well, in special collections in the library, because it's a land grant university. So it's a big university, big library. They've got a lot of special collections of people's papers and stuff like that. But they also had they didn't have the complete 22 version, 22 volume. I think they only had 13 of them of the Curtis prints, the Edward Curtis daguerreotypes of the native cultures. And they were falling. They were in these folios and they were all falling apart. And I actually made 13 clamshell archival boxes for the library. It was great. And they had all the they had all the stuff. They had the like gold like lettering stuff that you could. It was cool. So, I mean, it lends itself to photography because bookbinding is something that you're focused on the minutia of it. It's methodical.
Yeah.
You pay attention. You have to be clean. And so that's what interests me. And I didn't do it for a long time, but it was something that like, you know, now I can do this. I have a body of work. Who's going to see the rest area books? I mean, or the rest area work, you know, I apply to shows. It's not, you know, I get some shows, but if I can make books and pass them out, I can get it to people.
Yeah. And it's such a natural way to view a photograph, you know, it's like the, to me, it's like one of the few art forms that really is approachable, the most approachable in a book.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really the thing. So this one that I'm showing you now is,
this is
new. This is up at the farm in Washington County,
yeah,
where the Murray residency is. So that was I'm trying to make one a year, and I'm so far I'm on track for the last 3 years. So that's good.
I'll ask you a dorky question right now.
Dorky question.
What is this paper? I love this paper.
Oh, it's what is it? It is Red River.
Oh, okay.
Duo.
I've seen it.
Red River. Okay. I'm a fan of it's double sided. Yep. I'm a fan of Red River.
Yeah.
You know, their papers are not. They're direct consumer, so they're cheaper. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
This is beautiful. These are beautiful books.
So, right. And so it's an object, right? I mean, because that's another thing about photographs that I really like is that they're objects.
Yeah.
We've gotten away from it just because we're Instagram and we're, you know, and we make prints, but do we really? But the book is you can't avoid a book, right?
Right.
You're gonna pick it up. And even if you do this, even if you just flip through it,
right,
you're gonna pay attention to it. Yeah. You hold it.
Yeah. I took a couple like experimental book class. Like at Purchase they had a book arts program. And it was pretty serious.
Right.
And you know, doing photography and some printmaking. And I took a couple classes in it. And it's, you know, it's absolutely fascinating, you know.
Well, and there's so much. I mean, you can be sort of, I mean, these are, I'm, most of mine are fairly traditional, but there's so much that you can do with it. And especially with printmaking. I mean, that's a good combination, printmaking and photo and bookbinding.
So, I remember making some clamshells late at night. And that was the product. It was just like, make a clamshell perfectly.
Right. You
know? it's like, you know, hair. It's like, oh my God, you know, you're trying to do it with an X-Acto. And
I remember for the portfolio and presentation class that I took in grad school, it was, you know, it was graded and it was grad students, but mostly undergrad. Mm-hmm. And there was a list like you need to have all these things.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. What, so, you know, it's funny because I have this in my notes. And we've hit on a couple of things, but we just looked at the book, the trees book, that project. And it's my last note. I look forward to it every year.
Okay.
I'm like, here
we go. It
changes
every year, but yeah.
You know, and to me, it's such a, Well, in one way, like the book is a great way to show it. But it's so suited for the medium of the social media app.
It's of Instagram. And it's an Instagram. It's an Instagram worthy. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, there's this like weird humanity to it where you're like, I'm looking at it and I'm just like, oh, this tree, and it was just in someone's house and it was the center of this joyous moment where everyone would gather around and, you know, hold hands and sing or whatever. And then it's just tossed in the street. Like,
it is a little of that. Yeah.
You know, it's like this kind of, you know, yeah, it really, I love it though. But also there's like this humor to it. And I don't know. I appreciate that.
Well,
that project.
Thank you. It really started. I mean, it's my knucklehead dog who started during the pandemic, because we was a pandemic puppy. You know, you walk a dog, and I walk a dog every morning.
Yeah.
And yeah, come December 26th, boom, there's trees out there. And I've always noticed it. Like, you know, you always notice it, right? It just happens. It's just part of the ritual season. But this way it was like really, you know, like past them, you know, because it's Albany, so we just put everything on the curb. You can throw anything out on the curb. Mm-hmm. And they do recycle them. They grind them up and make them into mulch and stuff like that. So it's not ending up in a landfill.
It's not purely American.
Not a pure consumerist. We will make stuff and then we'll throw it out. It's not quite that. But it's odd, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have them in our houses for a little bit, and I'm not sure I thought that much about it. I was like, okay, what am I going to find today? You know, it's just one of those like, oh, I'm going to walk around and find, you know, I got to find another tree.
Right.
You know,
turns into a hunting practice.
Right. And the convenient thing about using the phone is the GPS is set. Mm. And the time is set. I can go back and say, oh, this is when I took them.
Yeah.
So it's very methodical, right? Like what interests me in making the books, that kind of like, okay, mm-hmm. Laying it all out is brain work.
Yeah.
But making them is the process, and it's an act, and it's just the process. It's mm-hmm. letting the process dictate. And that's really what the trees did. You know, there's a little bit, I think the first year they were all, I was very conscious of making them all sort of very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there'll be an angle in the frame, or they'll be from the back.
Interesting.
But then it was just like, well, do I need to have that convention? No, I'll just take pictures of them. And I was less, you know, this year I was much less. I think the first year I was very rigorous about it. I set myself up. I'm like, I'm going to be rigorous. I'm going to photograph, and I'm going to walk, and I'm going to look, and if I see one, I'm going to go march down there and take a picture of it, and I'm going to count them, and they're going to number them. Yeah. And I was very much like, this is my little thing. Yes, exactly right. I toe tag all of them. This is number one. But then it was just kind of, it doesn't need to be that. And it was that, and then it wasn't. And then it was just a matter of, and it certainly is, it certainly can be taken as a sad commentary.
Yeah.
It can certainly be a critique of consumerism or capitalism or what Christmas is now as opposed to what it should be. I mean, you can find, I think maybe that's what people respond because everybody brings that to them.
Right.
I guess I could pull a Cindy Sherman and say I was just making pictures. I just wanted to make pictures. But
And it can be that too, though.
It can.
It's like all these things.
Right. Yeah. And the process drove it, really. It was like that first year, especially. It was just like, I need to find them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make this loop and this loop. I'm like, boy, you're getting walked, Porter.
So circling back, kind of like heading towards the finish line, I do want to touch on this idea of the studio practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your use of found imagery and projections.
Right.
And like, where does that fit in, or how does that, well, first, how does that manifest itself?
Right. Okay. So, I can be very specific about it. Where is it? So, when I was driving a truck across country at the Brimfield Flea Market, which is over here in Bristol, Massachusetts. I ended up finding a bunch of these. And what I'm passing to Mr. Baker right now is a lantern slide. Nice. These things were used in the teens and the 20s as, you know, this was before the ubiquitous 2x2 slide. They were used for teaching. You know, that's it. I don't know if that one, that one's been dropped, so it's broken.
Yeah, that's no, great though.
But it, this one actually is interesting as well because it's from Akron, Ohio. It's somebody looking at the welt on a rubber, a roll of rubber. But and I mean, I think as photographers, it's hard not to appreciate old images, and especially ones that are presented like this, because it's an object. Again, it's this piece of glass, and it has an image on it, and they're from Keystone View, and they were, you know, they were probably originally stereographs, but then they were made these, and they're big projector that people would look at in schools and stuff like that. And so I had all these images, and I'm like, I got a drawer full. I've got not literally drawers full of them, because I bought a box that was, I don't know, huge. And I've bought more since then. And I never really had a goal in mind other than to have these images. But then in grad school, I started making these pictures with these, because I had them projected as like a rear projection. And they became this projection series because I have no creativity when it comes to titling things. And so they were this image that was made in, say, the teens and the 20s and the 19-teens and the 1920s. And then I would visually comment on it. I would bring other things into it. One of the first images, and it probably is the summation of it. I just quit with that one image. And that was one of the first images that I made. The lantern slide was a picture of the London Bridge, different city. The London Bridge in London. And I don't know if you know the story about the London Bridge. The London Bridge actually doesn't exist in London anymore. It's actually in Havasu, Arizona.
Yeah.
Because some investors bought the London Bridge and moved it brick by brick to Lake Havasu, which struck me as like truly an American thing to do.
Yeah, sure.
And so there's a picture of there's a Mark Klett, who's a landscape photographer I like, photograph of the London Bridge, so that his book is open to that, and there's me, and I'm holding something. I don't know what I'm holding, but so they were all kind of self-portraits. I was all in them, not me face necessarily, but I was always in them as part of it, and it just became this comment on the image. And they were pretty straightforward. This is one of them over here. I did prepare.
Okay. Look at that.
So this is the one I'm showing you is of the Aswan Dam on the Nile. And so
it was darkroom print, right?
This is, yeah, it's an actual, yeah, it's a silver 20x24 silver print.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, it's kind of, they're rolling. It's starting to move, but they were all in film. They were, you know, I can put a little lament for type 55. Polaroid film, because it was, you know, can have a little moment of silence for it. But they were all, you know, so this was a projection onto a piece of transloom or tracing paper. And then I would set up soil, and this is the little chemistry set that I have. And
how were you being pushed to make this? I'm curious. Like, was there a particular professor, or was it
there? Yeah. So actually, yeah, I can assign everything that I've done to class. Not necessarily, but no, there was a class that I took in grad school called Narrative Tableau.
Okay.
And the professor broke down, the idea of this narrative photograph to essentially place person action. He had some assignments within that to like, okay, we'll do these kind of things first. And then we were charged to making these photographs. And that was really where I was like, oh, I have these lantern slides. I can do this. This is cool. Why don't I start playing around with this? Mm-hmm. And it's also a technical challenge because you're rear projecting, and I was using strobes, and so there's some balance life. So there's
a whole problem there. Yeah,
it is, but it's a real solvable problem, right? It's just, but it was enough of a problem that I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, you know, and you get the film back, and you're like, oh, this is really cool. So there was still that magic, right? So, and then it just became this idea of commenting on these old images. Yeah. That sort of ran its course and finished up, I don't know, 2005, 2006. I stopped making those. And then later on, I started making the Uncoupling series. Which are similar, although instead of projecting, because projecting got, one, I didn't really have a space where I could do it. I didn't have a basement that I could set up and do, because it took a fair amount of space, just logistically. And so I started making these Uncoupling series, and they were just, what I would do instead was I would take these lantern slides and print them and cut out parts of them. So me and an X-Acto knife and carving, and then I would use windows. So the spaces that I had, we had a space up in Cahos for a little bit. We were
part of that. I remember that.
Yeah. The little Studio Internationale up there would, and there were windows that looked out. And so what I was trying to do was force these cut pieces of images into the real images, the real world, whatever. I did it much more intuitively. These were much more thought out. They were like, okay, you know, like this one of the dam, it's the dam, it's water, it's about control of the land. Okay, I've got sand that, you know, and it's the desert, and I'm boiling water, and that, you know, so there was a very sort of direct,
right.
I'm a pretty literal guy. And these were much more like stream of consciousness, like, okay, that, you know, that businessman,
much,
like almost to the point where I'm like, are they really that interesting? Or are they just weird? But yeah, so it was much more like, well, okay, you know, that person in that space, and I had to use extreme movements on the camera.
Yeah.
Just, and so that became part of it too, is this, you know, so the 4x5 allows for planes of focus that run not parallel to the camera, that run, you know, this I'm explaining. And so the focus became this sort of narrow band of in and out. So hopefully I would get little bits of things in focus. They're much weirder.
Yeah.
They're less direct, less specific. And I still kind of do them. I'm excited actually, because I have access to a space now that soon, maybe, that I'll be able, the windows up in Troy, that I'll actually be able to do some of them again.
Okay.
I did some at the academies. I did this one's I think a bad one, but because I have a dark room, I was using paper.
Yeah. Oh, a paper neg.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Because again, it was really wonderful to use like type 665 paper, type 665 pack film. And I had made this camera that I shot the Uncouplings, many of the Uncouplings with.
Really?
It was like this. It was a 4x5, but it was like a 75 millimeter Polaroid lens. So it was very shallow. It didn't cover the whole thing.
Okay.
And I was using pack film. So it was a smaller film anyway. Right. And there was just a lot of like, that adds to it too. Because if you look at the pictures there, there's a lot of like mistakes. There's a lot of the like artifacts of the instant film. And
that pack film, that gives you a negative as well?
It gave you both, right? Yeah. Right. It gave you the print. So it was essentially, because there was type 55, which was the 4x5 stuff.
Yeah.
And then there was, I think it was 665. I can't remember anymore.
I still have some of that.
I have like 5 sheets of type 55 up in the refrigerator. I'm like, I don't, what am I going to use it for?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So that's where that kind of came out.
Yeah.
It still lives in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Like that was from, I don't know, last year.
Because to me, that's like the first way I knew your work.
Right.
It was like this weird collage-y. I first saw it, I didn't really understand how it was made.
And that's good.
That's right? Fine. Yeah. No, I don't like the mystery is good, you know.
Right. And that was part of it, right? I mean, because I'm a sucker for the visual. I'm a sucker for that shallow. I mean, I get fascinated when people do the like tilt shift slow-mo of the city stuff. That's I mean, I'm like, I'm drooling out of mouth. But so that there was a little of that. I mean, that mechanism of the camera with changing the plane of focus is always interesting, right?
Yeah, of course. With this stuff coming out of grad school.
Yep.
So that's the 90s, and I'm trying to feel
into the aughts.
Yeah, like was there a certain rejection going on at the time of like the kind of new topographics, or
I think I've always been conflicted, right? Mm-hmm. So the landscape work was always, I mean, and it not just within myself. People have said this to me. It's like, you're not doing anything really new. And that's true, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we could apply that to, we could metaphysically say you're never doing anything new. But but it was kind of, you know, I was kind of doing it for myself. I was just kind of like, oh, this is great. I love landscape. And so I felt like there needed to be more, right? So it needed to have something else. And I don't want to say that I was trying too hard. I just was like, I need to explore this in a way that seems less rote, right?
Right. Because some of them like really read like portraits. And although we never see your face, or we might see a
half side of my face, or profile,
there's a theatrical aspect to him that's pretty interesting.
It was a theatrical aspect. It was me. I had no interest in bringing models or anything into that. Just, again, that goes back to my portrait thing.
Like, right. Or you just, I'm the same. I don't want to work with somebody. I don't want to tell them it. I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
This is uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
And
I don't need to push past that uncomfort. I don't need to embrace that uncomfort.
Yeah. It's interesting. In a weird way, in grad school, I was doing some weird portraits that it was like, it wasn't projections, but it was like these very like weird, just like slight glimpses of my body. And, I've never shown them to anyone.
I don't think I've seen that work. Yeah.
No one needs to see them. There was probably like four or five. But I was like, oh, okay, I see kind of what Rob, like, oh, I was like running down that path maybe.
I have work that I've shown, but, or that I don't show anymore of like, just the whole series of work that I made, like along the Mohawk River, where I was like, I was in the picture, I was picking up like garbage and stuff in the, in the water, and I was using a flash and the landscape and they're pretty trite, but
yeah.
I get what I was doing. It influenced some things, but
yeah.
I mean, you always do that, right?
If
you're not making work that you're ashamed of, my Lord, you're not trying hard enough. You're not making work that you're that you're ashamed of.
The one we're going to wrap up, but I did have this one question of that I thought was very interesting when I was looking at your timeline, because you get out of grad school and it's almost immediately you're at St. Rose.
Kind of.
I didn't realize that.
I taught for a year.
1 year, yeah.
At the University of Akron, right. So my professor and mentor, who's now a really good friend, he wanted Guggenheim, which like you do. And they were looking for a replacement, for a year replacement. And I applied through a couple of people applied too, and I got the job. So it was great. It was like, and I was right there, visiting assistant, and I made the most of it. I got a grant from the college to do some stuff, and and then I got the job at St. Rose.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible.
It was good. It was good. Yeah. I was very lucky.
Yeah.
But, you know, but then also the program shut down. So, like,
right. Well, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But yeah. No, I was.
But you were there for over 20 years.
I was there for 20 years.
I didn't realize that.
I'm an old dude.
Yeah. I guess, well, you're aging just, well.
I guess. I don't know. yeah, no, it was, it, and it was good, you know, and there's, you know, and I've landed on my feet at the mm-hmm. Albany Academies now.
How do you find that transition from college to high school?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, you know, it's different, right? So even at a school like St. Rose, which was still very dedicated to teaching
mm-hmm.
the act of teaching, professional development was like really encouraged. There were some grants. It wasn't big cash. It wasn't a research institution, but you were, you know, for lack of a better word, expected. You were encouraged, but expected to make work, right? Like what we do, right? As artists that we do, we're driven to make work. We're driven to make photographs. We're driven to make paintings, all that.
Mm-hmm.
I was so naive. At the academies, I said, we had a professional development day. And I asked my supervisor, I'm like, oh, can I just like go home and work on my studios? And he's like, no, you have to be there. We're doing like professional development.
Team building.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. Get this now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that. And it's also a bigger time commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you teach, as you know, when you teach in a college, you know, you have 18 contact hours a week or however many contact hours a week you have, but it's not, I mean, I have contact hours that are, you know, in the 35 hours a week. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, I have to be there from a specific time to a specific time, and it's all, I mean, I'm very lucky to have landed and be teaching photo. Right. And the kids are great. The expectations are not what you would expect of a studio major, which I was right. blessed at St. Rose to mostly teach major classes, mostly sophomores and juniors. So, you know, you've got a level of buy-in there from, mm-hmm. from a sophomore in a BFA program that when you're talking photo to a high school student, it's different.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's good. We have a dark room.
Is it all film?
It's not all film, though. It's digital, okay. too. Actually, I was my key addition to the my. This is why they won't fire me at the academies, because I brought I brought essentially the computer lab that I had at St. Rose is now ensconced at the academies.
That's great.
Tables, chairs, computers, scanners, printers, the whole bit.
Wow.
Because when they closed the program down at St. Rose,
didn't they just leave everything?
Kind of. I mean, I reached out to a lot of people and I'm like, look, you know, I don't know what you're going to do with it, but we're a 501(c). We can accept it. And I can use it. And so, they didn't know what they're doing. I don't think they still know what they're doing. I don't mean to criticize St. Rose, although I think I probably have right to criticize them.
Sure.
But they just didn't. They made decisions without thinking about what that decision would, what the repercussions of that decision were. So, and yeah, with the art building, they just shut it down and then they hoped to sell it and they did sell it and they were originally going to sell all the equipment in it. But then the people who bought it were like, we don't want the equipment. And so, just because I had opened up conversations with people, Collarworks got a bunch of stuff, you know, so we got to go in like 2 days before they sold it and, hurry, hurry. We got Bard. Some friends of ours got the Bard printmaking.
Oh, my God.
Lothar came up and grabbed a bunch of stuff. So, yeah. And now it's going to be apartments. So
that's what I was guessing. Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's going to be, I think they're making, somebody said 28 or 30 apartments in it. I mean, it's a big building.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
a crazy location.
It's beautiful. It's
great. Yeah.
And the person that bought it owns the parking lot next door. So he's just going to kick everybody out that he rents spaces to, and he can use that for parking. So,
okay.
I don't know. Things move, right? I've made peace with it.
Yeah.
I guess I don't need to be angry.
Yeah.
But
maybe a little.
I mean, yeah, sure. I'll see what I can do. But yeah, so.
Wow. Oh my God.
But it is a transition to high school.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine.
But a good challenge.
It's probably similar to what I deal with.
I mean, it might actually, right? Yeah, I mean, I, like, when I was at St. Rose, I taught a intro to Photoshop class, yeah. right? And it was yeah. it wasn't a major class. It was a general elective, and you'd get freshmen, you'd get seniors.
And
actually, you know, it's not much different.
Yeah. I mean, I'm dealing with 18 and 19 year olds.
Exactly. Exactly.
Almost all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So I get it. Yeah. But, wow. Yeah. Well, Rob, it's been fun.
Well, thank you, Justin.
It's been great.
Yeah. Thanks for coming to my cave of a basement.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's cozy.
It's cozy.
My
it's
basement cozy. Studio is, I don't know if it's cozy. I'm still trying to figure it out.
It's a workspace with a computer and flat files. Yeah, it's not really a place where I can set up things. Yeah. Ideally, that room would be the room next door, but.
Oh, is that a printer under the blue?
It is.
There you go, folks. You know, that's Rob O'Neill. And as always, thank you for listening. And if you like what you heard, share it and tell a friend. And Art Town is produced, recorded, and artisanally something, I guess. I don't know. Manufactured by Silent Studios North. And theme music is by Fantagram.